Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe, and many of you have been with us for a long time as we've done this program over the last year, and I'm glad you're with us today. And of course, you also know that you're with us during Spring Pledge Drive, and we hope that you are supporting KCBX not only as a listener, but also as a member of the subscribing community. And we'll talk to you a little more about that as the day goes on. But I want to remind you that Central Coast Voices is really a show about offering you credible, valid information and insights about the diversity of our community. And for some of you, this may be one of the most diverse shows you've ever heard, and we'll explain why in a little bit. Central Coast Voices is really addressing today's choices and how they affect tomorrow's community and the ramifications of both everyday life and everyday changes in our society. We're part of a program called Action for Healthy Communities, and Action for Healthy Communities puts out a report about every 3 years. The latest report came out in December of 2013 called Vital Signs, Understanding San Luis Obispo County. You can find a full copy of that report at www.actionslo.org, and a lot of information about what's going on in our county and how it's affecting people's lives, both economically, socially, and culturally in many ways. Today we get to do a program that is probably the first program I think that we've done that probably needs to be defined, and it's probably going to get defined about 17 or 18 different ways before we get done with our hour today. We've titled the program Welcome to Makerspace, the Real 21st Century. And I'm not going to attempt to have an official explanation of Makerspace. We'll get into that a little bit. But we have Michael Bales and Steve Phillips from Santa Barbara. They're actually from Hackerspace Santa Barbara. And Dr. Clint Slaughter, who is the CEO of Slow Makerspace. And we get to find out the difference between what a hackerspace and a makerspace is. And I'm a little worried that by the time the hour is over, even though we'll get a lot of explanations, we still won't understand what the difference is because we aren't quite sure what they all are anyway. But we'll get there. Well, our guest today, Michael Bales, who also goes by Swiss, and we've asked him to refrain from explaining that, but he will at some point if he wants to, I guess. He's the co-founder and CEO of the Santa Barbara Hackerspace. And he considers himself a technologist and a hardware hacker specializing in electronics, robotics, and system administration. And before you decide that what's going on your radio concerns you because the word hacker's in there, we will at least give either Swiss or Steve a chance to explain what hackerspace is and the good reasons that one can think about hackers as opposed to the bad reasons people can think about hackers. We also have Steve Phillips. He's the other co-founder of Santa Barbara Hackerspace, and he considers himself a computer programmer, an entrepreneur, an internet activist, and a I wonder if this is not cyber. It's cypherpunk.
Cypherpunk.
Cypherpunk, yeah. And I had to make sure I looked at that carefully because it's cyberpunk. It's important to him that we know he's a UCSB alumni, and that may be because they've thrown him out of other schools that he doesn't want to talk about.
Hey, that's not true.
Okay. And and we also have Dr. Clint Slaughter. And Clint is an ERMD in his day job, or I guess that's a night job sometimes, but it depends anyway.
All shifts.
But he's also the CEO of the SLO Makerspace. And gentlemen, welcome, and thank you for being here, and I hope, and it's good news that none of you got up and left the room based on the introductions, so we'll go from there. Let's start with, I guess, the concept of somebody's got to define for me the difference between makerspace and hackerspace, or do we need to talk about the makerspace movement, if you will, first?
I think the makerspace movement is the first thing to talk about, or the maker movement, actually, as
okay.
It's generally called.
Oh, it's called the maker movement.
The maker
okay.
movement, right. And there's not that much difference between a hackerspace and a makerspace, aside from the name, I think. Mm-hmm. But I would say that the maker movement is this movement that's been going on over the last 10 years or so, and it's really people learning that they really need to basic skills that we're not teaching anymore. And people that want to get into developing new concepts and prototypes, and now they have those tools at hand. There's 3D printers and there's rapid prototyping platforms that even a child can program, essentially. And so these things are becoming much more accessible to the masses, and people are utilizing them to make things just for their house or make things for their jobs and make new products out of them. And it's really growing and exciting. It's outside of the typical education that people are getting.
Well, a lot of what we've done over the last few years in my perception of the evolution of computer technology is a lot of stuff that used to be done by other companies. I mean, we used to actually pay some composing company to put together a brochure for us and then send it out to be printed, and we can now do that at home. And I'm wondering if the kind of facilities that you guys are talking about, couldn't I just do it at home? And is there a reason why I would rather not do it at home, but I'd rather do it in a shared space?
You could certainly do it at home. The problem is some of the equipment, like the 3D printers or rapid prototypers, can be extremely expensive. So this way, it's more of a communal thing. You know, everybody kind of chips in and gets access to the same equipment that they maybe individually couldn't afford.
Sure, and it's also true that you may not have access to the expertise or may not have the expertise if you try to go it alone. And hackerspaces and makerspaces, equivalently sometimes called maker labs or hacker labs, it's all the same sort of thing. We really provide the expertise, the talent pool. Some people use it as a way to find people for their companies, or there's some entrepreneur or inventor who comes in and says, hey, I'm trying to work on this thing and I need more help with it. It's really helpful for people to go buy a hackerspace and get that kind of expertise or use that kind of equipment. And if you're doing really hardcore hardware stuff, like you need a mill or a lathe or a surface grinder or something that you probably don't have in your home or it would be very expensive to buy and put in your garage and be very noisy, going to a hackerspace also has that advantage.
As the oldest person in the room, my thought when I was reading through some of the information about both of your programs and the concept on a wider spectrum was, well, first off, home computers did not exist when I was first in college. Nobody knew what a PC was. I hate to tell you how heavy the first computer was that I ever worked on, but it was very heavy. There were places where you could go to fix your car. There were communal auto shops where you could rent a work bay and they'd have a lathe and a punch press and things that you needed to do if you were going to modify your car or just decide to do your own brakes when you didn't have all the tools. And so to some extent, I thought of this as being kind of in the same category as if I want to do something and I only have half the knowledge and half the tools, I can find a bunch of people who will help me provide the other half the knowledge and the other half the tools.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's not just about technology. We have a lot of basic woodworking and metalworking equipment, and we're actually teaching a class on how to keep your chisels and planes sharp, just basic stuff. We have a sewing machine class coming up on how to select the right sewing machine and maintain it. So it's not just about prototyping. It's about tinkering and building and making things that you can use at home. And the other fun thing about the maker movement, I think, is that it's got roots in the environmental movement, this upcycling of things. So you've got a toy that's broken, don't throw it out, make it into something else. Or you've got a product that you bought that needs an extra feature, then add it yourself. Or you find some old reclaimed pallets, let's make some furniture out of it. You know, there's a lot of possibilities.
Sure. Some people, they'll maybe 3D print something for an art project, and they don't need that anymore, and you can melt it back down. Some people try to reuse that plastic for a new 3D print, so that's also very efficient.
How did this start?
Maker movement or the hackerspace, notion of a hackerspace in general or individual organizations?
Well, people who have like views of things going on around them have collectively gotten together for centuries. But somebody out there had to say, gee, I'm going to rent some space and put some of this together, and I believe there's an interest in it. And I'm wondering where that started. Not necessarily locally, but on anywhere.
To my knowledge, the first one was in Berlin. I can't recall the name right now, but that's really where it started, and it sort of spread from there.
Yeah, there was some hacker conference there, and people said, you know, there's this idea of a hacker space. You know, you can do things with technology, electronics, robotics, software. And there were people from the U.S. who attended that, and they came back to the U.S., and they co-founded, what, NYC Resistor. There's a few of the major hacker spaces in the U.S. that got started whenever that was.
I believe Washington, D.C. was the first one in the U.S.
Yeah, okay. There's like Hack D.C. NoiseBridge is a major hackerspace that's in San Francisco. NYC Resistor is another major one that's in New York City, of course. Mm-hmm. And some of the major ones got started right after that hacker conference in Germany and said, this would be really cool. We want things like this to exist.
And when was that conference again?
I don't know, okay. 8 years ago-ish.
Yeah, somewhere in that range.
But the MIT's had Fab Lab, so they've got a nonprofit model that's got 70 or more places around the world of these fabrication labs. So that's been going for quite a while. And I think the Maker Faire has been going on for 7 or 8 years, too.
Yes. 2005, I think, as Tim O'Reilly said. Okay. He said, you know, we want Maker to be a thing, and no one heard about it for several years, and now it's huge, and a lot of children go and learn a lot about technology.
I guess there's a national, international Makers Fair that's this May.
Yes. Well, there's the Bay Area Maker Fair that's the 16th, I believe, or 17th of May, and then we have our Slow Mini Maker Fair on the 10th. So that's the Saturday before the Bay Area one, and then in the fall in September is on the 18th is the New York City World Maker Fair. And that's all sponsored by Make Magazine, and that's an interesting thing as well. So they've built a whole website and a maker culture around these magazines that they publish with to-do projects, you know, fun projects every month that you can either build your – I think this month you can build your own Raspberry Pi-based tablet. And Raspberry Pi not being an actual Pi, it being a Linux-based computing platform that's open source.
Mm-hmm. $35 mini computer. People are using it for a lot of projects. That's a good kind of component people use for many things.
Sorry, it was disappointing to know it wasn't a real Raspberry Pi.
My fingers are getting messy.
It's one of my favorites, anyway.
Fred's hungry.
There's a lot of things that have happened in computing, and everybody talks about when Bill Gates started Microsoft, and we can argue that one forever. Let's stay away from it. But in San Luis Obispo, I'm aware that a guy named Bert Forbes and some other fellows started a company called Zeotech. And it started as a – really, they started it in their garage, okay, which seems to be where a lot of this stuff – and Zeotech was a company – actually, Zeotech is an entity that doesn't exist anymore. They got sold out to Intel a number of years ago. But Zeotech devised some hardware, and of course the software to go with it, to manage and operate robotics. And that became a big thing. And at one point, Zeotech probably occupied about 80 or 90,000 square feet of space in San Luis County. And then this project went on. So a lot of things have been started out as somebody's garage project. I suspect that the kind of stuff you're talking about could go smoother if you weren't doing it in your own garage.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, when you have the assistance, you know, like Steve was saying about how there's a whole wealth of knowledge in a hackerspace or a makerspace, people that are just around you that you can bounce things off of. You can think of new ways to do things. And doing it in your own garage, you don't have the space, or you don't have the tools or the expertise. And it's just really helpful to have this communal group of people to tap into. And the other interesting thing, too, is that, you know, I think the makerspaces do allow you just much more flexibility than you could otherwise. You can rent a space out in either Santa Barbara Hackerspace or Hackerspace Santa Barbara, right? Or a slow
Santa Barbara Hackerspace, yeah.
and now you've got a desk there and a workbench and a
was
place
that a to, way to be able to say the name three times and make sure everybody paid it? Okay. Oh, yeah. Sorry, okay,
which
yeah.
which name Santa Barbara Hackerspace?
Yeah, okay.
What about slow makerspace?
Yeah. So our hackerspace actually started in my garage about 4 years ago. So they can't even start in a garage and go from there. Yeah, you know, we just had meetings with a handful of people, and I add some tools if I made them available.
Yeah, yeah. It took us about 9 months to get enough people who are interested in putting some money together to rent our own space. At the beginning, people were like, "Well, what's a, you know, is this really a hacker space? Seems like more of a club." I'm like, "Well, we're gonna have space. Give it some time. We're just getting started." And but yeah, it took 9 months and made it happen. Had seven people put in $100 a month each for a while, and then we had more people putting in less per month since then. But that was the some of the beginning story for.
Well, we're going to need to take a break because, among other things, this is KCBX Public Radio, and as public community radio, every spring and fall we have a pledge drive, and so you're going to hear from us talk about that for a few minutes, but I'm not going to make these guys necessarily sit through that part of the discussion. When we get back, I need to remember that we need to basically define the word hacker and explain why everybody seems to hate it or have a problem with it, but some of you, for some reason, love it and like to use it in a different context. So we have, I'm sure, some of us would like to know what the difference is there. Anyway, this is Central Coast Voices. We're going to remind you for a few minutes as to why we want you to subscribe to KCBX Public Radio, and then we'll be back with these gentlemen in a couple of minutes. Well, welcome back. I truly hope that you pledged during that pledge break because we want to still be here. There's a lot of us, myself included, who are volunteers at KCBX, but it also takes real dollars and real support from the community to make things happen. So I thank you for your support and being part of this process. For those of you who may be joining us at the moment, we are talking about the whole makers movement, which is about makerspace and hackerspace and interesting things in both technology and hardware and software and just things going on and people learning how to do things and expand them. But the word, when we left the last segment, the question I brought up, actually unanswered for the entire 15 minutes we were talking to you with, was can you guys explain to me why in the world you decided that the using the word hackerspace was even going to be something that was going to be well received by the community?
Sure. I mean, the original idea was, you know, at the very beginning, it was people who self-identified as hackers who would be most interested in joining. So it's certainly not a turnoff for those people. So, you know, now things are more broad. You know, sometimes people refer to themselves more as makerspaces just because it sounds friendlier. But a hacker and a maker are basically exactly the same thing. Hacker has a little bit more of an emphasis on software. So software hackers are most, you know, people who build software, tinker with software, interested in creating it, more often identify as a hacker than a maker. But same sort of thing. There's people who do a lot with 3D printing and, you know, electronics and robotics and more frequently use the term maker. But it's just fundamentally people who like building things.
Yeah, and the hackerspaces, you know, they're not hacking into a mainframe anywhere. They're not like, you know, the DoD sites or anything like that. Hacking in this term is more you're hacking your life. There's actually a good website called Lifehacker, and you're basically making things work better for you. So at a makerspace or a hackerspace, you could take an Arduino, which is a little microcomputing platform. Arduino.
Arduino.
It's from Italy, so okay. Arduino. Okay. But you know, it's a $35 little microprocessor, and you can hook up lights and servos and things. But you can make program that or hack that to make your washing machine tweet to you when it's done. So we're talking about hacking your things that you own, as opposed to hacking into, you know, bad things. Although it does have, you know, an allure of, you know.
Sure.
Know, spy versus spy kind of thing, the name, I suppose.
Yeah, some people hacker doesn't just mean cyber criminal. It also means, people who are making things. And like you said, that one definition of hacker is, of a hack is using something for something other than its originally intended purpose.
Exactly.
So it's just.
If I remember right, the term hacker came from the Model Train Society out of MIT. Mm-hmm. And in the 60s, this was a group who were running around MIT and picking locks and generally doing things they weren't supposed to. They referred to themselves as hackers, but the society was the Model Train Society to avoid any suspicion.
It was a cover, okay. Yeah, because
we are not covers.
It does not sound very clear. Model
Train Society. Yeah, exactly.
So a lot of the origin of this is people who take things apart because they're inquisitive about what taking them apart means.
It's a lot of people like that at hackerspaces. Exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's. I actually could have probably gone all day long without your explanation of that. Only because as you were saying this and giving this explanation, I thought about when I was about 17 or 18 years old, taking apart a reel-to-reel tape deck that did go back together and then did work when I got done.
That's the hard
but
part.
I did have about five or six parts I couldn't explain.
Yeah,
and so I tried to explain to my dad that was just discovering that they didn't need to be there in the first place.
Right, it was overbuilt.
He didn't like it. Oh, over. You know, I had not thought of that term, but that may have worked out.
Nice.
Overbuilt. Okay, it's my father's not here anymore, so I can't use that to explain to him. But yeah, it's okay. It's so. I guess this. what we're doing, what you are doing with technology and tangible goods and software is just an extension of what pretty much humanity has always done in some way, which is try and tear something apart, figure out why it does what it does or why it doesn't do what it's supposed to do, and then either put it back together or build another one to replace it.
Yeah, that's exactly what part of the hackerspace and makerspace movement does. There's also – we chose to call ourselves a makerspace as opposed to hackerspace, not because we weren't going to play with electronics or wanted to sound cool, because hackerspaces do sound cool. It's just that we are incorporating, as do all hackerspaces and makerspaces, other artisan-type things and crafts. So that's where the maker movement comes in, where it's not just the technology. So we don't want people to be afraid when they're hearing Arduino and all these other, you know, fancy processing terms. It's really – we've got basic woodworking, basic metalworking, we've got soldering irons, we've got sewing machines and a serger and all kinds of things, a vinyl cutter that you can make just about anything with, and you don't have to be involved in technology to appreciate a makerspace or a hackerspace.
Are you buying this kind of equipment, or are you acquiring it from salvage? Are people just saying, hey, you know, I've got this great old lathe I'm not using, and I can't. And my wife said, "Get it out of the garage."
A combination.
yeah. A lot of the last one. Not just people getting rid of stuff, but you know, there are a lot of there's just a lot of nice people who exist who happen to have equipment and say, you know, I need to use it, you know, when I need to use it, but that's pretty infrequently. So if I kind of semi or, you know, kind of partially, you know, temporarily donate it or maybe permanently donate it as a piece of community equipment, then so many more people could benefit from this, and they really like what we're doing, and they know that, that's just a great help to have those resources. It's more of a draw for people to become, you know, paying members of the hackerspace. So it works well.
Yeah, we've developed a little system recently where there's a lot of people who have this equipment and they say, well, I'm kind of saving this and I want to use it eventually. So I'm a little hesitant to put it in the space, but I'm also worried about liability. What if my tool's in somebody else's space and somebody gets hurt on it? So we have a little mini contract that people will sell us something for a dollar and then we'll put it in the space and people will use it. We can't guarantee its condition when it gets back, but we'll do our best to maintain it. And then if you want to get it back at any point in time, you buy it back for a dollar. So we've got somebody that's doing that with some tools right now and somebody thinking about it with a potter's wheel. So it's a good way to do things. It takes the liability off the owner, and if they don't want to just straight up donate it, and they can get it back.
Smart.
If I'm listening to public radio locally and I go to San Francisco or I go to Chicago or any place, I'm going to usually be able to turn on the radio and get a pretty good handle on what I'm listening to and how it's presented, and it's gonna fit in my repertoire of information. If I go into a hackerspace in San Luis Obispo, slow makerspace, and I get some orientation and understanding of that, is it gonna look a lot like what I'm gonna see in Santa Barbara? Is it gonna look like what I might see in Denver?
You know, I think they're all a little bit different, but I think most of them have the same spirit. We were actually talking earlier about Tech Shop, which is already sort of the corporate giant of makerspaces. And not that they're bad, but they're much more business-oriented, whereas most makerspaces are – it's a very community-oriented place. And I think they have a similar feel, but everyone's going to be different because it's tailored to the community.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you look at the definition of hackerspace on Wikipedia, you know, they'll talk about digital arts and, you know, some other things, you know, and some hackerspaces do tons of digital arts. Santa Barbara Hackerspace, in particular, I'd say it's more software and electronics and robotics and tons of 3D printing, especially over the past year because they've become so capable and relatively cheap. But yeah, it varies, but fundamental core is the same.
And there are some national movements to sort of standardize some sort of a membership between hackerspaces that's sort of in the fledgling stage, but that hopefully will be coming together and it'll help that coalesce a bit.
That'd be great.
Actually, have somebody talk to the yacht clubs. And I'm not being sarcastic about that. The yacht, probably more than any other entity in the United States that I know of, the yacht clubs seem to have a kind of an interconnected thing. They all work separately. They all work independently, but they keep a network of members. If you happen to belong to a local yacht club, you can, and which I don't, I just know about this.
Cool.
I actually know some people who belong to the yacht club in Avila Beach, but don't sail, but they like the social environment and they like the, being able to go to other yacht clubs when they travel. So that becomes a way to kind of interconnect that. So, yeah, talk to the yacht club guys. All they right. might be able to help you out with that.
The thing that I found interesting is that I don't think a lot of people get the concept of a makerspace or a hackerspace in general until they've been in one. It's really hard to explain because it's just it's different from – any place that people have been. You know, you've got this place where you can go and hands-on use machines and learn how to do all this techie electronic stuff that seems kind of scary, but it's brought to everybody's level when you go to a place where people can help you use it. And you get more creative when you're in a place like this. But you have to sort of see what it's about. So come on down.
Give us a radio tour then, if you will. If I walk into either of your spaces, is there somebody there who's in charge, I guess, for starters?
No,
if I walk in and I see – I'm sorry. If I can think of no other way to put this. I walk in and see 25 nerds focused on their entire own project. How do I figure out who's going to want to talk to me? Nobody's going to want to talk to me. But how do I figure out who is the most likely person to give me information when I walk in the door? Or is there a designated lead person in the environment?
We're very different, so you guys go first. And
We have a fairly close-knit group, but if somebody new walks in, somebody will look up from what they're doing and go engage them, give them a tour, you know, show them around, give them the basics. And there's always somebody around that will do that for you. There's no designated person. It's whoever hops up and does it.
Nice. Who unlocked the door this morning?
It unlocks itself.
Yeah. Electronics for the win.
All right. Okay.
Okay. We're different here in SLO in that the Santa Barbara Hackerspace is nonprofit. We're a for-profit, and eventually we want to be a B Corp, so it's basically benefit. Our goal is not to make a lot of money. Our goal is to bring something better to the community, mm-hmm. and that's just how we evolved, how we were able to fund our startup as opposed to collecting a small group of people that could actually rent a space. And so we have a full-time shop manager, and so in our open hours from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. on the weekdays and 1 p.m. to 11 p.m. on the weeknights, we have somebody there who can give you a tour around, who kind of knows everything and the skinny on what's going on. And then we also have work trade members where they trade essentially time in the shop, working at the shop for a membership. And we're planning on expanding our hours, but also if people want to rent out a specific spot, a private workspace, they can get a key. And eventually we want robot doors like you guys, though.
RFID, yeah.
Robot doors, okay.
But it's worth mentioning that there's a guy, Jack, who is sort of the kind of groundskeeper there and does give people a lot of tours. So definitely don't hesitate to come by SB Hackerspace, regardless of how many nerds you're picturing in your mind. thanks to Fred. But definitely not, you know, it's a friendly atmosphere, people talking about tech or mm-hmm. and making things. It's fun.
So what gets somebody in the door for the first time?
For the most part, for us, it's been word of mouth. Somebody says, hey, I'm working on this project at the Hackerspace, and talks them into coming by.
What's the Hackerspace? Oh, let me show you.
Coming by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we have people that have a project in mind, and they've heard about it through a lot of word of mouth, or we have a Facebook page. And, all right, it's time to start my project. Let me head on down and sign up, and then they can see what – kind of get ready and figure out what their resources are going to be and what they need to do.
How much of what's going on is software-driven, and how much of it is a need to actually build a physical, tangible object?
That's a good question. It's a fairly even split as far as I know.
Yeah, maybe 60-40 hardware, 60% hardware, 40% software, I'd say. But, everybody has a laptop. It's not like somebody's just going to use – everything's software-driven anyway. You have some mm-hmm. microchip that you need to program, and then that controls the hardware. So there's software and everything, but quite a bit of hardware, I'd say, in our space.
We're more right now like 90% building hands-on type of things, and the CNC router and laser cutter and 3D printer, and then maybe 10% of the programming. But we're ramping up. We've had a lot of interest in Arduino classes, so we're going to teach another couple of Arduino classes soon, I think next month.
A CNC router?
Oh, yes. Okay. Computer numerical control. So CNC router. All these things are similar, built on similar platforms where you have an X and Y and a Z axis, and the 3D printer just squirts out melted plastic. plastic on the X, Y, and Z axis until it builds something. A CNC router will cut things on the X, Y, and Z axis. And so you can take a piece of plywood, a 4x8 sheet of plywood, and Rory Aronson, who was our shop manager, who now has his FarmBot project going on in our makerspace, he made a pterodactyl, so a huge pterodactyl out of, you know, those little cut wood puzzles that you can
yes,
get?
Yes, I've seen
them,
yeah.
A giant one of those out of a piece of 4x8 plywood that's hanging above the router. That's pretty epic. And
that's cool.
Yeah, so you can make cabinet doors. Another one of our members just made a room divider that has all these cool little Moroccan symbols or a pattern in it. And so you can cut out pretty much anything you want, signs.
The person walking in already has an idea of what they want to do.
Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes they're generally interested in the idea. You know, there's a recommendation and it's explained and they're like, that sounds kind of interesting. I'm not sure what you're talking about, but let's go check it out. SB Hackerspace, like coming by our space at on like a Saturday at 2 p.m. would be the ideal time if people are interested in getting involved.
Well, after the break, we'll remind people of that, and we'll talk about it some more, how people can get started in this a little more. I want to remind you that this is Central Coast Voices, and we're talking about the Makers Movement and Hackerspace in Santa Barbara and Makerspace in San Luis Obispo. And I want to remind you also that this is Public Radio KCBX, which is listener-supported, and you're listening to us during Spring Pledge Drive. We would like you to consider that, because if you're not supporting us, we may not be here, and we would like to continue to be here. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Well, we're back, and we're, of course, Central Coast Voices. I'm Fred Monroe today, and we've got some fascinating stuff to continue talking about. We're talking about the Maker Movement or Makers Movement and Hackerspace in Santa Barbara and Makerspace in San Luis Obispo. And this is fascinating stuff, guys. So what I pose to you is someone who has absolutely no idea what this is going to be about and what they want to do, but they are information junkies or just very curious people, and they want to find out what in the world you're up to, and especially because maybe you moved in around to the corner from them and they're a not-in-my-backyard NIMBY that wants to figure out what's going on here, because, you know, most of the businesses around them are closed after about 5 or 6 o'clock at night, but you guys are still making noise at officially 11 o'clock, but probably 1 in the morning sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
How do you contact and integrate non-believers into your process?
Well, here in San Luis, we're right behind Trader Joe's at 3988 Short Street.
Okay.
And so people can just drop in when we're open and see what we're doing. And I think just coming in would make a non-believer a believer, because it's pretty amazing space to see. And but we can check out our Facebook page. We've got a lot of information, a lot of really neat pictures of things that people are doing in the shop. And also keep an eye on our classes, because we're really working on education with the community. We're working with Sinsheimer Elementary School, and we'll be doing some workshops there. We've got a Cal Poly Sustain group of students working with Sinsheimer. We've already been working with the principal, Pruitt, over at Los Sosa Valley Middle School. So we're really reaching out to the education community. This is a place for parents, for kids. We've got family programs, and we're really working to expand those kind of things. So it's really, really a place for everybody.
I'll let you jump in a second. I want to remind our listeners that we'll make sure that on the KCBX website, on the page for Central Coast Voices, that we put links in there. So we will have a link in there to both the San Luis Obispo Makerspace, the Santa Barbara Hackerspace, and some regional and national organizations also. Along with that, there's also an organization called Fishbone out of Santa Barbara that is a hacker or makerspace environment for artists and artisans. And so we'll have those links on the site. I tell you that because then you don't need to scribble things down faster than you might want to, but we'll make sure it's there. Go for it.
Sure. So you asked about, you know, hey, what if people aren't, you know, super, you know, hardcore hackerspace people? Why would they be interested? So someone might think, you know, okay, I'm not a roboticist or some, you know, not into doing electronics myself, but I do have an idea for a product, and I really need some ideas and some guidance on, like, how I might go about it. Well, then you're interested in hackerspaces. You know, if you're like, I'm not you know, I'm not going to build robots for fun, but I really need to hire a smart engineer. Well, then you're interested in hackerspaces. A lot of people use it as a talent pool. That's that is a draw. There's people, and on the flip side, I mean, there's people who are members of the hackerspace, and you know, I mean, Swiss has gotten a job out of, you know, by meeting people at the hackerspace. I've hired people out of the hackerspace, met people who I started companies with out of the hackerspace. It's a great networking environment as well. So if you want to network with people who are technical, well, then you're also interested in hackerspaces. So there's many reasons to be involved in various levels.
If you want to be a spectator, is there space there for you? Seriously, I mean, if...
Sure, there's people who come by and say, wow, this was 3D printed? Yeah, let me tell you more about 3D printers and what more can be done. They don't have to learn how to do it if they don't want, but it's fascinating as far as, you know, the kind of the cutting edge of technology.
Absolutely. Plus, you can do your own projects there, too. You don't have to be involved in the greater community or networking if you don't want to be. It's you have work to do. Then we have a guy who's going to build one of the tumbleweed tiny houses, I think. So he's going to pull his trailer up, and he's going to start building a little tiny house.
Wow.
But that's his project.
Cool, yeah. So that's really a non-technological project, but he can use some of the tooling that you have.
Yeah, the CNC router. We've got a saw stop, which is one of the safety saws where it's pretty slick. It's got a circuit or a current that runs through the blade, so if you accidentally stick your finger in it, it automatically stops and saves your finger. Safety first.
Absolutely.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, okay. Clint, we know that your day job or night job, as we said before, is you're an emergency room physician.
Yes.
What do you guys do besides get very involved in hackerspace?
Well, I'm a systems administrator for a number of local companies. Actually, I do some consulting as well as some in-house work, but that's my day job is sysadmin.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm a programmer, entrepreneur. You know. Do web development, do random consulting stuff. Started a financial technology company about a year ago, still working on that. Just do things that are technologically, focused, but, not necessarily just hackerspace related.
But Steve, for you, you basically can help make your career through the Santa Barbara hackerspace, right? I mean...
Oh, yeah. I mean, as far as the skills, I mean, the reason why I wanted to co-found a hackerspace is because I wanted an environment to exist, the ideal environment to exist, right, where I could acquire these kinds of skills and, you know, do software projects with other people. And that's turned out really... really well.
That's amazing. Yeah, we have a build board, we call it, where people can write down projects that they need help with. And so the goal eventually is to have members. If you're a member of Slow Makerspace, then people are going to be pitching assistance or jobs to members that you can make money work just being a member.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
How expensive is it to get involved?
So we have memberships that are $35 a month. That gives people access to, you know, almost everything we have to offer. People can use shop space for hardware projects, you know, woodworking stuff. Swiss is more of the hardware guy who can tell you the full laundry list of all the equipment there. But people are free to come by, use the resources, 3D printing, again, just all things we've been talking about. But sbhackerspace.com.
We also have an open day where anybody is free to show up and use the equipment without having to pay the membership, and that's Saturdays.
Nice. It gets people interested and connected to you that may not be aware of it
Absolutely.
Otherwise. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So we're $40 a month for the workspace, which includes the 3D printer and sewing machines, soldering stations, and electronics workstations. And then it's $95 a month for the full workshop, which includes a CNC router, laser cutter, and all the wood and metalworking. We've got a little welding station as well. And then we also have family memberships, where it's essentially half price if other people in your family join. And then anybody under 16 is free with the with a parent that's accompanying them.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to what Swiss said about Saturdays, please feel free to come by, you know, several times to get a feel for, you know, what we're all about and see if it's a place that you want to spend time doing interesting engineering things or finding other people, and no pressure to pay instantly when you don't know what you're getting. Yeah. That doesn't make any sense.
Can kids come by without parents, or how young? I mean, I guess you probably need some kind of legal release.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
So,
yeah, their parents should be with them, if it's especially if it's small children. But occasionally we have a couple, you know, teenagers that get, you know, dropped off on weekends and do some, you know, Java programming, or they make games or do some software stuff or hardware stuff.
And we just had a workshop. The Nova has a Making Stuff TV show, so we got on their list. So we got a bunch of stuff. So we put on a really nice workshop with the Pinewood Derby and building things out of gumdrops and toothpicks. And we had kids there as young as four that were playing with that. We had senior citizens there too. And so everybody was playing around. And the fun thing was, it was a Pinewood Derby that we had set up a track that was that one of our founders, Tom Cantrell, made an infrared sensor so we could do exactly how fast they were going. And there were no rules to this Pinewood Derby, so you didn't have to follow all the Cub Scout stuff. We had a bunch of electronics waste, so people were gluing hard drive platters to the wheels, so they're monster racers. Wow. And it was pretty fun.
That's cool. Yeah, our member base ranges in ages from something like, 11 to like 70 or so. There's a very broad range. Mm-hmm. Kids are definitely welcome. Great learning environment.
Absolutely.
What, for both places, or for all three of you, what projects have come out of there that have been remarkable surprises since you started?
So, let's see, there's a couple that are interesting that have occurred lately. There's a guy, Yasin, who's has a company called we have so-called co-workers, where there's people who can get offices. We're going to have one that's available in a couple months from now, probably, inside SB Hackerspace. You know, my company, startup, also rents space in there. But one of those companies is called Steam Torch, and they harness energy from the sun. They use it to heat up water, and then with that steam, they run it through a turbine and can generate electricity from it. Okay. So this is that's a commercial venture. There's a guy who's on a team who just won $25 million to do energy research. They're basically leveraging potential energy, which is always there, even if the sun's not shining and the wind's not blowing. Swiss can probably talk more about some interesting like electronics and robotics projects.
Let's see. We one of the more interesting ones, we picked up a robotic arm off a manufacturing line that dates back probably to the early 80s.
Nice.
And when we got it, the controller for it was shot, so we decided we're going to make this thing work again. There's been a team working on that, building a controller for it from scratch, and hopefully soon here it'll be a pick-and-place machine for building electronics.
It's fun. Yeah. Well, I think some of our projects were just building the space itself. We did a build-it-yourself kit for our CNC router and our laser cutter, so that was quite an effort to get those all assembled from scratch. It was kind of fun. I recently just made a Lego briefcase, laser-cut Lego briefcase for my son. So you can just pull the drawer out, and there's Legos in there and the little green platforms.
That's make it out of Legos?
No, it's a good point. Well, that wouldn't be all that sturdy, though.
And that's true. And the kids get upset if you glue their Legos together.
That's right. Exactly.
Gluing them together gets people very upset.
Yeah, watch it. But also Rory Aronson, who was our shop manager, I mentioned FarmBot. So he's one of our shared workspace members. So he has his own sort of office where he's prototyping this CNC-based farming machine that can put seeds down in the soil. It's going to have sensors to see how moist it is or what nutrients are missing. It'll be able to add fertilizer and weed. It's a pretty amazing project.
Yeah. That's great.
There's a couple things, Clint. You mentioned that there's a San Luis Obispo's having a makers fair.
No, mini maker fair.
Mini maker fair. Okay.
Mm-hmm,
and that's, when is that?
That's May 10th, I believe.
Okay.
So we'll
make sure that your website is posted, as we said, and people can get information there, and it'll be public. It's going to be Mission Plaza. So
yes, and we're just a part of that. Actually, the library, the Slow Art Museum and Cal Poly, they've been instrumental in making this happen. We're just on the committee to help out.
Good. Anything going on in Santa Barbara we need to know about in the next month or so?
We don't have a solid date for it yet, but Santa Barbara is also planning a mini maker fair in conjunction with the public library.
Nice.
So hopefully we'll have some more details about that soon.
There'll be some information on the website then, as I reminded you all that we will make sure that the website connections for these organizations and other things involved in the makers movement are on the KCBX website, on the Central Coast Voices listing also. And This is fascinating stuff, and I'm glad that we could talk with you guys today. There's a fair. I'm sure we can probably find some links for you that'll be on the website also. But there's a Bay Area Maker Fair on May 17th and 18th, and we'll get some information on the website for you for that also. Want to remind you that this is Central Coast Voices. We have had a really great time talking about this, and This is something that's a production for Action for Healthy Communities on KCBX, and we're glad that we can bring things to you that are diverse and interesting and a little out of the ordinary. And I realize this is becoming more ordinary and less out of the ordinary as time goes by. This is a project for Action for Healthy Communities, and want to remind you that Chris Kington Barker and I alternate weeks. So Chris Kington will be here next week, and she's going to be discussing the National Equal Pay Day, and that's really looking at the fact that women currently still make 23% less for the same work than men do, and that is a key issue that needs to be looked at and talked about. And Chris will have some representatives from the American Association of University Women, and also Jane Lair, who's the associate professor and interim chair of the Women's and Gender Studies Department. She'll be with you next Thursday. I'll be back with you in 2 weeks. This is, of course, Central Coast Voices. You can get a hold of us at voices@kcbx.org, or you can call 805-543-2323. We're always looking for information about other programs we can share with you, and we're glad you were with us today. My guests have been Michael Bales, also known as Swiss, Steve Phillips, and Clint Slaughter, and we've been talking about the Maker Movement, and it's been delightful to have these folks with us. Stay tuned for a little bit of pledge pitching, of course, and then the programming will go to one of my favorites, which is This American Life. And this has been Central Coast Voices. Thanks for joining us today. Thank you.